Lead paint is a thing of the past, but the past continues to haunt cities like Philadelphia, where a lot of the housing stock is older. A new lead law came into effect in the city in 2012. It requires landlords to have older properties tested for lead paint before they can rent to families with small children. But kids are still being exposed. Reporter Audrey Quinn takes a look at the impact of lead, past and present, in the city.
Today, Aladdin Rathi is visiting a row home in northeast Philadelphia. It's a brick two-story unit with a white metal awning. He tries the doorknob. It opens. The place is empty inside. He steps into the living room. Mirrored wall, stubby beige carpeting, and like any Philadelphia housing built before 1978, this place likely contains lead paint. It has to get certified as safe if the landlord wants to rent to tenants with small kids. That's where Rathi comes in.
What we first do when we get to reach a particular unit, we check visually whether there is any paint which is chipping, which is flaking.
He heads upstairs.
Actually, we do have a problem there, if you notice.
The paint on the ceiling is starting to peel back.
Usually in houses, there is layers over layers of paint. The top layer could be fine, but in case it's chipping, it's uncovering a layer which is underneath, which could be actually containing lead, and that would be a disaster. I mean, just a little flake. A kid who is 3 years old would just, hey, play with it, put it in his mouth.
I'll admit, I'm kind of a skeptic when it comes to environmental hazards. Like, come on, a little bit of chemicals isn't going to hurt you. But lead paint, especially if you're still a developing kid, it's the real deal. Bad news.
Oh, boy. In the early part of the century, children literally convulsed.
That's David Rosner. He's a lead poisoning historian with Columbia University's School of Public Health.
The descriptions are horrifying. They became paralyzed, eyes going back in their head, dramatic neurological symptoms.
Lead paint was everywhere in the early 1900s. Kids were dying from it.
I mean, weren't people getting mad?
Well, people noticed it, and clinicians were noticing it. But, this industry was huge, and it was very powerful.
The lead paint industry was so huge and powerful, lead-based paint wasn't outlawed till 1978. People got more careful. You saw less kids having seizures over lead. But something more sinister was happening.
In Philadelphia, a pediatrician named Herb Needleman, he had his office across from a school, and the school was in a poor neighborhood, and the kids were doing badly.
This was the late 50s. Dr. Needleman had noticed before that his lead poisoned patients, they seemed to have some behavioral issues, more than seemed normal. He wondered if lead poisoning might have something to do with the problems at the school. But how could he prove that?
And lo and behold, what he did is he started this project called the Tooth Fairy Project.
The Tooth Fairy Project. Lead only stays around in kids' blood a little while. But baby teeth, it turns out they're a great place to look if you want to know about a kid's long-term lead exposure. Needleman measured lead levels in a bunch of kids' teeth. And he also got their school records. He compared the kids with lead in their teeth to those who hadn't been poisoned. In 1979, he published his findings.
What he found is that if a kid had elevated blood levels, even if it wasn't causing what were traditionally the symptoms of chronic lead poisoning, you found that teachers said that these kids had problems at school, they had trouble learning, they couldn't read as quickly.
A more recent set of studies looked at crime rates over the past few decades. The researchers found drops in crime. They correlated to the time when a location outlawed lead and gasoline. The logic is that fewer people impaired by lead poisoning means fewer people at risk for getting into trouble. Rosner's not a big fan of that line of thinking.
Crime is such a complicated issue, and who gets arrested is so socially determined. To say lead causes a child to be a criminal is kind of missing the point about the injustice of the criminal justice system.
But he says other researchers have found lead poisoning correlates to lower IQ, aggression, impulse control issues. And here's why I said the situation's so sinister. These days, lead poisoning typically happens in rundown older homes, often rentals where landlords fail to repaint. Kids living in these places are already at a socioeconomic disadvantage. Add lead poisoning to the mix, it can set them back even further. But lead poisoning can affect anyone. Back in 2007, Heather Fameen and her family moved into a two-story row home of their own. She says she knew going in the house had lead paint, but she figured she'd clean regularly, she'd make sure it didn't flake. The kids would be okay.
But one day, we saw my daughter Stella, who was almost two at the time, and I caught her chewing on the banister. And then I noticed there was at least a dozen more bite marks all up the banister.
She took Stella to the doctor. The little girl had just enough lead in her blood so the authorities had to be notified. Inspectors came, and Fameen spent the next year stripping old paint from the house.
My name is Stella.
Stella's now a healthy 8-year-old. She likes Pokemon and playing dress-up with her little sister. And much to her mom's relief, she's one of the top students in her class. But for a lot of Philadelphia children, lead poisoning has more serious consequences.
Lead poisoning is still a problem in Philadelphia, absolutely.
That's Rachel Greenberg. She heads the Southeastern Pennsylvania Lead and Healthy Homes Program through the National Nursing Centers Consortium. She says over 85% of Philadelphia's housing stock was built before 1978, before lead paint was illegal. That's more older housing than in most big cities.
Also, we have a very high percentage of children under six. So when you combine those two factors, I do feel like the issue of lead poisoning is being overlooked in Philadelphia.
In 2012 alone, nearly 1,000 Philadelphia kids had lead poisoning. Pennsylvania leads the country as far as the percentage of kids with lead in their blood. Greenberg says, yeah, overall lead poisoning is less common than it used to be.
However, the number of children being tested is also being decreased as well.
She says that when it comes to services for preventing lead poisoning, Philly is worse off than it used to be. And other health advocates in the city point out the new lead law doesn't do enough. It only requires landlords to get lead inspections on properties they rent to families with kids six and under, which could lead landlords to just avoid renting to these young families. And the law does nothing to protect renters with 7 or 8-year-old kids. This year brought a big victory for the fight against lead poisoning. Six major California cities sued a group of lead paint companies. The city said the companies knew all along lead paint was dangerous. Now they should be responsible for getting rid of it. The suit succeeded. The lead companies have to pay $1.1 billion towards getting lead off California walls. Lead historian David Rosner testified in the case.
Here you have California, which is kind of the bellwether state for all sorts of environmental laws in general. The bellwether state saying that this issue could be addressed through the courts and that these large, large population centers have a right to gain compensation from these companies.
He's hoping other large cities like Philadelphia will follow suit. Back in the Philly Row home, Aladdin Rafi's finishing up his inspection.
So we have here the back bedroom windowsill, so we're going to put it in that particular tube.
The samples all get sent off to a lab.
We're pretty much done.
So easy.
Yeah, it is. That's a very pleasant, actually.
Rafi got the apartment's test back from the lab the following week. The results? Lead-free. For The Pulse, I'm Audrey Quinn.